Good afternoon. Welcome to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 24th, 2014. Scott Burton, your Monday host. On today's show, we'll talk with Warren Anderson about events at the Treadwell Ice Arena. We'll warm up our appetites by talking with bakers getting ready for the Juno Co-op preschool pie sale. Kristen Bartlett and Rustin Burton will be here with news about the United Way campaign. And we'll learn about the Northern Lights Junior Theater's production of The Christmas Doll and meet with playwright-composer Joan Cushing, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on A Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Recently, a fundraising event put on by a church in Manitoba, Canada, was postponed. A women's drum group says they're upset the church objected to them smudging. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
They're called the Buffalo Gals, an indigenous drum group. They were preparing for a fundraising event that was to be put on by the Mennonite Central Committee. It was a benefit concert for 1,200 people to be held at the Pentecostal Church in Winnipeg to mark the committee's 50th anniversary. But it was postponed because of a controversy over the Buffalo Gals' smudging ceremony. The church would not allow the ceremony on its property.
Pretty disturbing that this could still happen in 2014.
Val Vint is one of the Buffalo Gals. She says the ceremony would have taken place in private.
It wouldn't have been on display. It certainly was not part of the performance in any way. It's a ceremony that we do to prepare ourselves.
The church's pastor says tolerance of religious beliefs goes both ways. Meanwhile, other religious leaders are commenting on the controversy. Bob Gilbert is a United Church minister. Gilbert says his church holds a service called Aboriginal Sunday, and smudging takes place on the steps of the church as part of the service.
The more churches that introduce those kinds of things into their own worship, I think the more blessed they'll find themselves.
The controversy has created a rift between the local Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal communities. Val Vint, however, is calling for a traditional circle with members of the Mennonite Committee and the church, hoping that a solution can be found. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
About 100 Native American and social justice activists rallied at Levi Stadium in Santa Clara, California, during Sunday's game between the 49ers and the Washington football team. They're calling on the National Football League to end the use of race-based names and end the use of Native Americans as mascots. Christina Onnestad reports.
Change the mascot!
Change the name!
Change the mascot!
For more than 40 years, indigenous activists have organized to stop the use of Native American racial references in team names and mascots in sports. Andre Klombit with the Karuk tribe in Northern California says a Washington football team's name is racist.
If this was the Washington N-word or the Washington Jews or any other ethnic minority, there would be no question about it that it would be over. And it's racist because it portrays us as less than we are as Native people in the 21st century.
They're asking for NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell to end the use of the racial epithet in the league. But Washington football team fans don't want to see the name changed. Thomas Powell is part Choctaw and Cherokee Indian.
I understand what they think Redskin means. They used to scalp us too. So get over it, you know, time to move on.
Some football enthusiasts sympathize. Josie Rosas, part Apache, is a 49ers season ticket holder. She thinks the Washington football team should change its name.
It's like taking the whites only sign off the wall. You want to live through that history and look, people are still to this day using something so terrible.
But it's unlikely the league will force a name change. Last year, Commissioner Goodell says the team's name is a, quote, unifying force that stands for strength, courage, pride, and respect, unquote. Christina Onnestad, California, National Native News.
The White House has extended the deadline for tribal leaders to RSVP for the 2014 Tribal Nations Conference. Those planning to attend have until Wednesday to respond. One representative from each federally recognized tribe is invited to the event. The conference will be on December 3rd in Washington, D.C. According to the White House, it will build on last year's gathering at which Obama discussed establishing the White House Council on Native American Affairs and a presidential trip to Indian Country. The administration says its goal this year is to strengthen relations with leaders. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Striking Eagle Invitational Basketball Tournament and Educational Fair on December 31st. Information on services and the fair at ahcnm.org.
Program support by the Institute of American Indian Arts, offering the MFA in Creative Writing, featuring one-on-one mentorships with authors like Sherman Alexie, Natalie Diaz, and Joseph Boyden. More information available at iaia.edu/MFA.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 24th, 2014. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. Scott Burton, your host, and with me in the studio now is Treadwell Arena Manager Lauren Anderson. Lauren, welcome.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming down today. So tell us about what's going on at the Treadwell Ice Arena over in Douglas.
All right, we have a couple upcoming events for the holiday. And on Wednesday, we have our 9th annual Turkey Bowling Disco Skate. And this
wow.
is really fun. It's for all ages. And when you come in, you just pay your regular admission, and we'll have a sign-up sheet. And we just ask everyone is able to bowl one frame, and we have a youth section and an adult section. And for youth 7 and under, we have a small game hen for them to bowl, but it's an actual chicken. And this year, our chickens have been donated by IGA.
Oh, that was very
thoughtful. Sorry, turkeys.
Thoughtful of them. Okay, so paint the scene for our listeners right now. What does it look like in the rink when you're doing the turkey bowling?
All right, well, we turn down the lights, and we have our blue string lights that are above the arena and our disco ball on and music,
perfect.
Of course. And we have our plastic bowling pins set up, and we block off the arena so that people can still enjoy the open skate time, but then have somewhat of an alley, like
okay.
a bowling alley.
Sure.
And we have a special handle created by our arena staff on our turkey, because that's one of the toughest parts,
I
is
bet.
Keeping that turkey intact. And it is frozen, so it moves quite nicely across the ice.
So it's almost like curling, but with a turkey.
Exactly.
And bowling.
It is.
It's
yeah.
fusion.
It is. It's pretty fun. And so then we just call out people's names. I've got the microphone, and we get everyone involved, and they're able to bowl their one frame. And then we just keep track. And
do they step on the ice itself, or do they have like a mat?
Yeah, no, they have ice skates on. You must
oh,
have
wow.
ice skates on, which is really tricky when you're trying to balance. You know, sometimes it's a 15-pound turkey.
So this is the 9th annual. It's obviously been going well.
Yeah, it has been. And it's from 6:30 to 8 o'clock on Wednesday, November 26th. And our admission fees are adults are $6. Youth are $5, and skate rental is $2.25.
That sounds like a lot of fun. That's
yeah,
this
please
Wednesday.
Bring your friends.
Wednesday night entertainment. All right, what else is going on?
Well, we're closed on Thanksgiving, but the day after Thanksgiving, we have our annual Skate with Santa. And this is sponsored by the Douglas 4th of July Committee, and that's on Friday, November 28th from 7:45 to 9 p.m. Kids under 12 are free. And this is an event that directly follows the tree lighting at the Pioneer Pavilion.
Okay. That sounds very nice. That's Friday night?
Yep.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about what that scene looks like.
Well, we have Santa, of
mm-hmm.
course, on ice. And he will be skating with everyone. And he's a pretty good skater, that
Does
Santa.
Does he do any tricks?
He can do some tricks.
Wow.
Yeah, you'll have to come and see. It's been a great event in the past, and we're looking forward to it this year.
Right.
There will not be a disco ball, but we will have elves, and the elves will be some of our figure skaters in our community.
Oh, fun.
So
you
can come out and see our elves and Santa. And, yeah, our regular admission for the adults is $6, and then youth 12, over 12 is $5, and then the skate rental is $2.25. So we hope to see you for the Santa skate.
Okay. What else is going on?
Over the weekend, we have some open skating, which is great to come out and work off your feasting calories.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some pond hockeys for those of you interested in playing hockey, and you are required to have full gear, full hockey gear for that. And that's various times throughout the week, and you can go to our website to check out some of our specific times. If you have youth 5 and under, we have a parent and tot time on Sunday, and that's from 10:30 to 11:30 on November 30th. And we do that every other Sunday, and we've had some success with that. It's $15 admission, and that's for one adult, one youth. And the skates are included, the lessons included, helmets, and it's just a fun time for toddlers to come out and get used to being out on the ice.
Absolutely. I'm trying to remember, how many years has the rink been open now, give or take?
They opened February of 2003.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a great resource. We were just talking about how busy you are, right? I mean, that place is hopping.
We really are. We're in the height of our season right now, and the high school hockey team practices at 5:30 in the, well, 6 in the morning. So we open the doors at 5:30, and then our adult league goes to about midnight, and then youth hockey and figure skating and group lessons are in between throughout the day.
And lots of Zamboni trips in between probably, right?
Yeah, there are about 12 per day, 12 Zam runs per day.
I always thought that would be fun.
Yeah, it's a great experience to drive the machine, and people don't realize how the skill level that you need. There's a lot of levers, and there's a pattern that you need to follow. So it takes some practice.
How does one become a Zamboni driver, if I may ask?
Well, it's a position just like any other city position, mm-hmm. and we have full-time Zam positions that, well, full-time through the season, and then summers are off, and then part-time Zam drivers. So currently we are not hiring in that position, but we often do have availability, so you'll have to check out the job postings on the CBJ website.
Great, Lauren. Anything else you want to share about what's going on at the arena?
No, we hope that you come out for our special events this week with our turkey bowling on Wednesday, November 26th from 6:30 to 8 o'clock, and come bowl a turkey with us, and skating with Santa on Friday, November 28th from 7:45 till 9 o'clock.
And if somebody wants more information, what's the best way to get it?
Well, you can give us a call at 586-0410 or visit our website at juno.org/parksrec/ice rink, or just Google Treadwell Arena and we should pop up for you.
All right. Treadwell Arena Manager Lauren Anderson, thank you for your time today. I found a song. It's "If You Replace Roller with Ice." It's as apropos as a Roger Miller song can get, I think so.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
You can't roller skate in the Buffalo herd. You can't roller skate in the Buffalo herd. You can't roller skate in the Buffalo herd. But you can be happy if you've mind to. You can't take a shower in a parakeet cage. You can't take a shower in a parakeet cage. You can't take a shower in a parakeet cage. But you can be happy if you've mind to. All you got to do is put your mind to it. Knuckle down, buckle down, do it, do it, do it. Well, you can't go swimming in a baseball pool. You can't go swimming in a baseball pool. You can't go swimming in a baseball pool. But you can be happy if you've a mind to. Do 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 do. You can't change film with a kid on your back. Can't change film with a kid on your back. You can't change film with a kid on your back. But you can be happy if you've a mind to. You can't drive around with a tiger in your car. You can't drive around with a tiger in your car. You can't drive around with a tiger in your car. But you can be happy if you've a mind to. All you got to do is put your mind to it. Knuckle down, buckle down, do it, do it, do it. When you can't roller skate in the Buffalo herd. You can't roller skate in the Buffalo herd. You can't roller skate in the Buffalo herd. But you can be happy if you've a mind to. You can't go fishing in a watermelon patch. You can't go fishing in a watermelon patch. You can't go fishing in a watermelon patch. But you can be happy if you've a mind to. You can't roller skate in the Buffalo herd. You can't roller skate in the Buffalo herd.
Programming support on KTOO is provided by Silver Bow Bakery and Catering, announcing ready-to-serve Thanksgiving meals for 8 to 12 people or half orders serving 4 to 6. Ready for pickup and eat Thanksgiving Day. Silver Bow Catering, accepting Thanksgiving orders at 586-4146.
And you're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 24th, 2014. Scott Burton. And with me now in the studio is Mr. Buck Willoughby and Paxton. How are you guys doing today?
Great, Scott. Thanks. How are you?
Yeah, Buck, so tell me about your relationship with the Juno Co-op Preschool.
Well, this is our first year in the Co-op Preschool. Paxton is 3 years old, so this is the first year he could be...
Okay, yeah. Cool.
This is the first year he can be enrolled in it, and we started at the beginning of the school year, and we really like it.
Good, good. Give us Co-op Preschool 101 for the community a little bit. What's it like? Where are you guys? All that stuff.
Well, we're down in the flats at the Northern Lights Church in the basement there. It's been going on in Juno for nearly 40 years, and we're a nonprofit organization, and we rely on several fundraisers throughout the year to cover our operating costs. And there's two different classes. There's a two-day class, Tuesday and Thursday, and there's a three-day class, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And we've got some great teachers, and with so many years of operating experience, they just have a wealth of knowledge of different activities every day for the kids to experience.
Great. About how many kids would you say attend the classes?
Full class is 20, okay. And then we can have, I believe, up to 2 to 4 subs a day also.
Now,
the poll is 20.
Buck, I've heard that there is a little shortage of preschool spots in Juno. Have you heard about that, or does that resonate with you guys? Do you have pressure?
Well, we've always, I think in years past, it's been harder to get in. There's been less options in town. And I think recently there's been more options. So
okay.
There's been actually, we still have a few openings on the Tuesday class.
Okay.
Yet, but the Monday, Wednesday, Friday is totally full. And that's the way we like it.
All right. And we're going to, I want to talk about this pie sale in just a sec, but what's a day look like for Paxton at school? What are some of the activities they do?
Oh, well, they show up at 9, and, you know, they each have their own names and their cubbies, so they get to find their own cubby and, you know, take their own clothes off, take their own boots off, which mm-hmm. is, you know, can sometimes take a while.
Their coats.
And then we go into the room, and just the other day they made cornbread muffins. There's the staples. We have a guinea pig, pebbles. We have a sand table, which sometimes has water or sand or beans in it. And, you know, they do so many great things, painting and, it's just wonderful, Play-Doh. And then throughout the day they have some free time to play. And then we have they have a story time, and then they get together and have a snack together, all family style, sitting down. And then they go outside and play. And that occupies all the 2.5 hours of a normal day at preschool.
Well, sounds like fun. And so you do have this pie sale coming up. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, well, this pie sale, we've been hosting it for nearly 25 years now, and it's at the Foodland IGA the 2 days before Thanksgiving. So that's November 25th and 26th, Tuesday and Wednesday. It's from 2 to 6 p.m., and the pies average between $10 and $20, and there's all sorts of variety there. I mean, we have the traditional Thanksgiving pies, the pecan and pumpkin and apple pie. But, yeah, we also have cherry, and I made some key lime pies today, so we've got quite a variety of pies.
Fun, fun. So this is the 25th and the 26th, so Wednesday and Tuesday and Wednesday.
That's correct, right, 2 days before Thanksgiving. So a lot of people can go down there and get something. Maybe they don't have to make it themselves, or maybe they would just want to support the preschool. And
aside from you, who else made some of the pies?
Oh, all the parents involved in the preschool. Everyone's mm-hmm. asked to make, you know, 2 to 4 pies to donate. So, yeah, a lot of the parents just sign up and
great,
make their own pies.
So to support the Juno Co-op Preschool, you can go to the IGA tomorrow or on Wednesday. And what was the time once more?
2 to 6 p.m., and we're in the cafe seating area, and we'll have some cute kids there with us. We try to sell about 90 pies each day, and we've sold out every year. So our goal for this year is 140 pies, and come on down and help us reach that, please.
Hey, Paxton. You want to tell us into that microphone up there what your favorite pie is? What's your favorite kind of pie?
Chocolate.
It's right. You want to tell us?
I like chocolate.
I like talking.
All right. And I bet you could probably meet Paxton if you went down there as well at some point. All right, Buck, are we missing anything? Anything you want to add?
No, Scott, that seems great. Well, I mean, we do have another fundraiser, if you don't mind me getting a little plug in there. We're doing kids' movies at the Nickelodeon. We've been doing it. This will be our third one on December 20th from 10:30 to 1 p.m., and it's just a fundraiser where the kids come down and get to watch Christmas movies. And then later on, we're going to be doing a dance fundraiser, but that's not until February, so maybe we'll have someone come on and
tell you about that
as we get closer to it. But, yeah, please come on down November 25th and 26th, Tuesday and Wednesday, 2 to 6 p.m. at the Foodland IGA and buy a pie.
All right, Bucket, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 24th of November, 2014. It's the birthday of the woman who first published James Joyce's Ulysses. Margaret Anderson, born in Indianapolis, 1886, grew up in a small town in Indiana, didn't fit in, so she moved to Chicago, wanted to start a magazine devoted to the avant-garde, and she called it The Little Review. First issue came out March 1914. It was 4 years later that Ezra Pound showed Margaret Anderson the manuscript of Ulysses, James Joyce's Ulysses. She read it. She wrote to Pound, "This is the most beautiful thing we'll ever have. We'll print it if it's the last effort of our lives." And they did print it, but all of the copies of the magazine were confiscated by the U.S. Post Office, and they were burned, and she was charged with obscenity. Margaret Anderson said, "I wasn't born to be a fighter. The causes I have fought for have invariably been causes that should have been gained by a delicate suggestion. Since they never were, I made myself into a fighter." It's the birthday of Spinoza, Benedict Spinoza, born Amsterdam, 1632. He was a brilliant scholar, but he got in trouble with the Jewish community because he questioned the existence of miracles. So he supported himself making lenses for glasses and telescopes and microscopes. And in his spare time, he studied mathematics and philosophy. It was Spinoza who argued that the soul and the body are not really separate, but two parts of the same thing, that God did not stand outside the universe, but rather that the universe itself was God, and that everything in the universe was perfect and divine. It's the birthday of Lawrence Stern, born in Clonmel, Ireland, 1713. He was a preacher who then became a novelist, and he wrote one of the most revolutionary novels in English literature, The Life and Opinions of Tristram Shandy, Gentleman, 1760, a fictional autobiography in which the narrator is unable to tell his own story. He's always sidetracked by digressions on all sorts of subjects. The book influenced many writers of the 20th century, James Joyce and Virginia Woolf, Samuel Beckett. Italo Calvino said, "Lawrence Stern was the undoubted progenitor of all the avant-garde novels of our century." And it's the birthday of the novelist Nuruddin Farah, born in Somalia, 1945, author of 10 novels, all in English, all about Somalia. Nuruddin Farah, who said, "The only thing I can say is that I have tried my best to keep my country alive by writing about it." Here's a poem for today by Moira Donaldson, "A Woman Addresses Her Body." "For all my talk of soul, it was you always, sweet little beast, a moral animal, who showed me the ways of love, its passions and crucifixions, the artist, the anatomist, the poet and the surgeon. They have seen the glory in you. You beatified them in the moments where they believed. You are my way, my truth, my life. I am what you have made of me, and still I do not know the limits of you or where You Will Take Me Next. A Woman Addresses Her Body by Moira Donaldson from her selected poems, published by Liberty's Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 24th, 2014. Scott Burton, your host, with you. And now in the studio, representing the United Way Southeast, Kristen Bartlett and Rustin Burton. Welcome, you two.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, so, Kristen, you're a volunteer. Tell us about your relationship with the United Way.
Okay, sure. I'm a volunteer co-chair for the fall campaign with United Way, and then I also participate through my workplace in our workplace giving campaign, and I've done that for many years in, at multiple different employers, but I currently work for the Juneau School District, and so I've had the opportunity in the past to organize the workplace campaign as well. So okay. I help distribute the forms and make the opportunity available to the employees of the Juneau School District if they'd like to participate in supporting the United Way and their partner agencies.
Sounds good. I'd like to get more back to the nuts and bolts of the workplace giving in just a sec. Rustin, you're on the board.
I'm on the board.
Can you just sort of tell us a little bit about what United Way does?
United Way does a lot. We have 33 different partner agencies that we work with, and you've heard in the news about some of these partner agencies recently, but they provide service across a broad reach of needs in our community locally. And we focus on three main areas, which is health,
okay,
income stability, and education. And we try to give that focus so that we can better our community in that way. And we try to give whatever help we can to those partner agencies at the same time, who are also focused on those areas.
So it sounds like Kristen is part of one partner agency, which is the Juneau School District?
Well, we certainly work closely with the United Way, and we benefit from the United Way in that people who want to volunteer in our community can go to the United Way website and look at the volunteer opportunities. One of those opportunities is the chance to help students learn to read as a reading tutor. And that's a partnership between the United Way, the Juneau School District, and CORE Alaska. So the 33 partner agencies that Rustin was talking about are largely the partner agencies of the Juneau School District, too. So the staff members in our schools see the impact of those agencies on students and families in our community every day. And so we can see the positive impact that it has in working toward those things of health, education, and income stability.
And just as an example, what are a couple of those partner agencies folks might be familiar with?
So you have REACH, you've got Big Brothers Big Sisters, mm-hmm. AEYC, Catholic Community Services, SICA Counseling and Prevention, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, Glory Hole, Helping Hands. There's a lot of Cancer Connection. Just a lot of different things that cover a lot of different bases for our community.
Interesting. And Kristen, can you tell us what your actual relationship with this workplace giving works for you? Are you in a classroom then, or?
No, actually, I work at the district office.
Okay.
So I help coordinate the campaign for the entire district.
Okay.
And this year, we've asked our other employee groups to partner with us. And so what that entails is making the opportunity available to employees if a school wants to invite people from the United Way to come in and talk a little bit about our partners,
mm-hmm.
and what they do, how the campaign works. They are happy to attend staff meetings or come to group meetings and
give employees a little bit more information. It's really easy to participate in the campaign. You can do it as an individual as well as through the workplace. And when you contribute, you can do it as a one-time donation, or you can do it as a monthly withdrawal of your check. And it's really, the important thing is that it doesn't have to be a huge amount, but many of us making a small contribution makes a huge difference in all of these services.
Absolutely. If somebody did want to support the campaign, where should they go and how can they do that?
There's actually kind of a few things we might want to plug away on this right now. Obviously, there's the website, which is the UnitedWaySEAK.org, UnitedWaySEAK.org. But in addition to that, if people are listening to this, we're hoping for a few different responses to our message. If you want to donate on your own, we invite you to go ahead and go to that site. There's a pick, click, give things that you can do there. There's ways that you can donate there. Or we'd invite you to go to your boss or your business owner or something like that and encourage them to either donate as a company or to allow us to come in and make a presentation to all the employees and allow those employees to go ahead and do the paycheck deduction as well. And I know some people feel like they're getting they get plugged a lot for donations to charitable causes, but we really feel like this is something important for our community. With the way that some of these agencies are strapped right now, there's been a loss of dollars that are available to them, and they're really in tight positions, and we really want to help them out, and we're afraid of what the consequences would be if we aren't able to continue all these programs that we have now that really do a lot of good. It's not just getting kids to read, but adults to read and supporting in so many ways that actually save our community money and resources down the road if we can give them those resources now.
Yeah, there are so many things that the United Way helps these agencies do that it truly is an investment in the community, and it is a way to advance our whole community and our whole region. And when you contribute to the United Way through this campaign, you can specify which group that you'd like your contribution to go to. You can specify one of the different areas of education, income, or health, or you can just provide a general donation to the United Way for it to be used wherever the need arises.
Yeah. So it sounds like among the programs that you're very proud of is the reading program, helping folks to learn how to read. What's something else you might share, maybe in the income stability or health side, Rustin, that you're proud of?
You know, we did get some testimonials from a few of our partner agencies, and one of them was regarding AWARE and an individual who had been helped with the AWARE program. And, you know, we know in this state we have issues in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything we can do to help out those people who are victims of any kind of those circumstances, I think that's huge. I think that's a positive thing and something that we can't let go away in our community. And just in general, United Way, you know, we're part of the 211 program.
211?
Which is basically you can call 211 on your phone, and if you're looking for help in any kind of an area, you know, you can talk about parenting help, child care, food, clothing, health care, senior care, substance abuse, job services, all that stuff.
Wow.
You call that, there's people that are professionals on the other end that they kind of get you in contact with who you need to be in contact with. And the crazy thing about it is that these small donations that you make actually go a really long ways. If you were to do $10 a week, you'd actually be supporting that 211 program for a whole month.
Wow.
Over the course of a year. So it adds up. A little bit of the time adds up quite a bit.
One fun program that I recently learned about was the Juno Jumpers went to CAKE, and this is sort of along the lines of health, and they worked with students there at the CAKE school and taught them how to jump rope and did presentations for them and performances, and they were all doing tricks it was just, it, there's a video of it on the United Way website that you can watch. And it was a great example of how you can think of, you know, the synergy of getting all of these organizations together and think of new ways to get people together and improve their life.
Absolutely. And Rustin, one more time, if somebody wants to support this, how can they do that?
Go to UnitedWaySeak.org.
Okay. Anything we're missing or anything that the two of you would like to add?
Just hope everyone in our community has a happy Thanksgiving.
Well, thanks again, Kristen. Thank you, Rustin.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Carolyn Ohl dug and dammed a small piece of the southwest Texas desert to make an oasis for birds. She met Bird Note contributor Alex Chadwick at her home near Big Bend National Park.
Okay, when I bought this property, like in 1977, it had a couple of wells, and we got a little bit of water, but not much.
Carolyn's husband was at the Terlingua property one day in the rainy season, almost 20 years ago. And during an evening storm, the two of them watched the nearby arroyos fill.
Just like a wall of water would come rushing down in a rain, like a flash flood.
And they began to talk. What if we could save that water, hold it somehow? They dug a great space for a pond and braced and coated the surface and braced some more. At last, they had a dam and a channel that led to the pond.
But it's an engineering marvel to just watch a wall of water come down here and all of a sudden everything's full and all the water's going where it was supposed to go.
Writing about the oasis, she confessed that the water has come to mean more to her than anything. It's bigger than my grandkids, she says.
I'm afraid so. That's right. Yeah, it comes first to me. Because without it, I would have to give up on my habitat. If I gave up on my habitat, what would I do? How long would I be happy sitting in the city rocking my grandkids, you know? Not at all. About a day.
For Bird Note, this is Alex Chadwick. Funding for Bird Note series from Big Bend came from Dee Dee and Rusty Rose.
Come on, then. Get up. When I'm longing for a bike to eat, instead of complaining, I pick a song and with the right upbeat, I start entertaining a little of this, a little of that. A penny miss to put in me at. I can tap a little with my feet without any training, or juggle an apple pie. I don't got a lot, but I'm not one to cry, and I get by. When I need to keep me fingers warm by somebody's fire, or a place to come in from the storm, Nick Buckins for hire. I'm keen with a broom or chasing a rat. I clean up a room in 10 seconds flat. Give me anything and I'll perform. I sing like a choir. La 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 lulu lie. I may not be rich or on pitch, but I try and I get by. I can do a little dance for you. Just give me your cane, sir. A little something that they call soft shoe. Right here in the lane, sir. I hop on one leg or stand on me head. I don't need to beg when I need to be fed. I can do a sleighter band, it's true, if you will remain, sir. Just pick any card, no lie. Your card, I'm afraid, the ace of spades.
Never gone.
And
All right. You are listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, November 24th, 2014. Scott Burton, your host, and with me now are folks from Northern Lights Junior Theater's production of The Christmas Doll. Welcome playwright Joan Cushing. Thank you for coming in all the way from D.C.
Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you. And we also have Dessa Gerger. Remind me what part you're playing.
Lucy Wolcott.
All right. And also Julie Coppins. Thanks for coming in.
Sure.
And Julie, why don't you start? Why don't you tell us a little bit about why you decided to do this play where it is and that kind of stuff.
Sure. Well, you know, there are those stories that just kind of stitch into your heart and mm-hmm. don't let go. This is one of those shows. I saw the first production of it in Charlotte, North Carolina. I was working as a theater critic at the time at the Charlotte Observer.
Okay.
Was blown away by it. I thought, people need to know about the show. So, of course, I wrote a great review of the show. A few years later, I was working at Dramatics Magazine, which is where I do my editing and writing work. We published the script in the magazine, and at that time was in touch with Joan Cushing about her script and music for the show. A few years later, found myself here in Juneau getting started again with this junior theater company, and we were looking for a new, fresh holiday piece to bring to the Juneau community.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to the other organizers, what about The Christmas Doll? And I showed them the script, played some of the music, and they fell in love with it as much as I did. It's set in Victorian London. It's a beautiful orphan tale about love and sacrifice and getting a second chance at family at holiday time. Joan's score is beautiful. So we thought it would be a great piece to bring back Northern Lights Junior Theater.
And that original version that you saw, that was mm-hmm. the version adapted by Joan, is that right?
Right, right. And I think you heard a little clip of from that production on the recording there.
All right, Joan, you're next. What inspired you to turn this into a play? Elvira Woodruff wrote the book anyway, right?
Right, right.
And what inspired you to write the
play?
Well,
I'm always looking for books or stories that I like to see, you know, to show to theaters. Usually they commission me to write musicals based on books. And I just happened to see this in a bookstore, and I read the jacket, and it sounded really interesting, so I took it home, and I loved the story.
Mm.
And she wrote it purposely in the style of Charles Dickens. So it's very dark. You know, it's kind of mm-hmm. Nicholas Nickleby, Oliver, very dark play. And I thought it would give me a chance to write some gorgeous music for the darkness. And, yeah, that's how I got started.
Okay. And, Dessa, tell us about your character.
So my character is one of the two kind of main orphans, and I'm the older one. So Lucy is kind of the caretaker to Glory, and they work in a workhouse, and then they escape from the workhouse because Glory becomes sick, and it's about kind of them surviving on the streets. And then I get a job in the doll shop, and it kind of transforms the life that I had known.
And is this the first time you're playing Lucy, or have you done this before?
Oh, this is the first time I'm playing Lucy.
And how long have you been rehearsing?
Since
we started in late September.
Yeah.
Wow. And what's been some of the biggest challenges for you with this part?
Well, I'm not the most patient.
Oh, yeah?
So probably working with some of the younger kids has been a challenge for me and being patient with them.
All right. And what's been the most enjoyable part of it for you?
I love acting in theater, and then I really like all the directors, and they teach me a lot, so I really like all that.
Oh, cool. And may I ask how old you are?
I'm 12.
Okay, and what school do you go to?
I go to Dasanta Kahini.
Okay. And I was just thinking maybe this would be a good question for you, Julie. Tell us just a little bit about Northern Lights Junior Theater and its history.
Right. So it's been in town a long time. They've known for great productions. Maybe you saw Peter Pan or The Sound of Music. They've been inactive the last couple of years, and now they're back on the scene. And we are kind of expanding the company's mission, not just to produce shows, but to really be an educational resource for the community and to be a collaborative resource for other arts groups in town who are doing wonderful things on their own. But wouldn't it be great to add a youth theater element to some of what you're doing? So we're looking for some of those partnerships and trying to kind of connect the dots in Juneau while helping young people who want to be creative, develop skills, create their own original pieces, do really good quality work. One thing I'm really proud of with this production is it has a really strong social message. This piece takes place in a time when there was no social safety net, and these kids were literally on their own on the streets in London. And we've been talking with our cast about, you know what, here in our own community, there are children who don't have a safe, warm place to sleep. Right. And we adopted the Aware Shelter. My next-door neighbor actually works for them. So we started working on fleece blankets. We're going to give gifts to the Aware residents and invite them to the show. It's been a chance for our young actors to think beyond themselves at holiday time and realize, you know, theater has an important message to share. This can be, I believe, just a reminder to everyone just to count our blessings and to share what we have with our neighbors.
I see. And Joan, you said you've been here since last week. Is that right?
Right?
You came in all the way from D.C. and been working with some of the young actors. Tell us a little bit about your time, and I know you've been giving some workshops. What all have you been doing?
Well, we did a couple of playwriting workshops, one with younger kids, and I read some passages from the book and showed them how I turned it into a song, and then we had them help us act out some songs.
Mm-hmm.
They sewed outfits and hearts. There's a hearts girl in the Christmas doll. Lucy becomes the hearts doll. I mean, the hearts girl. And these kids acted out some of the stuff that we did, and little kids, you know, sewed hearts onto dolls. And then we did another workshop where we picked three books, and we had three groups. And each group took a book and tried to write, you know, tried to understand how to tell the story of a book on stage, and created characters, and then they had to create a scene with a song in it. And they had two hours to do it, and they did it. It was great.
Wow. Dessa / Lucy, what's it been like meeting the playwright and working with her?
It's just been really amazing to see how the play was the person who wrote the play. And it's been nice because Joan hasn't been, like, if we haven't been doing what she imagined, she was very nice about not saying, no, it's written like this.
She's not yelling at you? Or...
No, she was very respectful. And it was just really nice to have her there, but she wasn't taking over, which I really appreciate.
Well, that's nice to hear. Well, you know, she has, my favorite song in the whole show is your song. It's the last thing that I wrote, and it makes me, every time I hear it, even thinking about it, makes me cry. It's such a, I think it's one of the best things I've ever written, and it's really hard to sing. And opening night, when Julie reviewed the show, the girl who played Lucy was really, really ill. She was really sick, and she was sick to her stomach, running off stage the whole night, and she didn't sing the number. She just couldn't. So I can't wait to hear you sing it. I mean, I heard you sing it in rehearsal, and I'm not waiting for anybody. I think the people need to save their voices right now and just get the show together and not be thinking about how great they sound.
Yeah, Dessa has been working really hard on that song. You know, in addition to just regular rehearsals, we've had a lot of individual music rehearsals. Kids have come to my house. We've been working on the songs. And with this, it's called If I Were a Well-Born Girl, and it's when Lucy is in the doll shop. And for the first time, she's been living in the workhouse most of her life, where everything is dark and grim. For the first time, she sees beauty. These dolls are covered with lace, and it's like a complete opposite image of girlhood that she's experiencing for the first time. And this song captures all of her yearning and what she wants, and it all circles back to she wants to protect her little sister, and she misses her mother. And each verse of the song takes us deeper into that yearning. It is truly beautiful, Joan. It's an amazing creation, and I know Dessa will sing it beautifully. People are going to need tissues.
Yeah, and there is a passage somewhere in that script where she says, if I were a well-born girl, you know, and she says some of those things that I wrote. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have a song queued up from the production. Why don't we play it? I'm not sure if it's the one you're talking about.
Probably
but then,
not. I don't know if I shared that one with you.
Oh, okay. It'll be good, I bet. And then let's come back and talk some more.
Sure.
Okay.
Welcome to Mrs. Kimberly's Doll Shop. Thank you.
Dessa, Lucy, will you tell us about what we just heard?
So that song was called Mrs. Thimbleby's Doll Shop, and it, Act 2, that's what Act 2 opens with, and Lucy's coming into the doll shop, and she's just been muddy in the workhouse down by the mud of the river, and she comes in, and it's a whole different world. It's bright, and it's kind of higher class, definitely, and warm. There's beautiful dolls, beautiful people in beautiful clothes, and she's kind of blown away. And then there's her out of place because she's in rags, and it's just a nice change from the bleak, cold grimness of Act 1. And Act 2 kind of mostly takes place in Miss Thimbleby's doll shop, and it's very different.
Was it challenging to learn that song and be able to sing it?
Well, at auditions, we learned the first verse,
mm-hmm.
so we kind of knew it, but it's just a really nice beat and such a great melody that I think everybody caught on pretty quickly.
Right, and it's been fun. I have a daughter in the show, so it's been so fun. We come home from rehearsal, they've been singing for 3 hours, and there she is in the bathroom getting ready for bed. She's still singing, and that's a song that just stays. It's so catchy. You want to just keep singing it. It's really delightful.
So, Julie, tell us a little bit about the times and
sure.
where we can see it.
So the show is this weekend. It runs. It's at Thunder Mountain High School in the auditorium. So our performances are 7 p.m. Friday night, 2 and 7 p.m. Saturday, and then a final 2 p.m. matinee on Sunday. It's reserved seating, so you want to get your tickets either at the Jack or through Vendini, Hearthside Books, Rainy Retreat Books. And ticket prices, I think, are $15 for adults, $10 for children and seniors, $5 higher at the door. So it's great to get your tickets ahead of time if you know your plans. Please, as soon as you're done shopping in the public market, come see a wonderful show. I think it's something that everyone in the family can enjoy together.
Yeah.
And, Joan, do you get to stay for all the performances?
I'm going to miss, because I'm spending Thanksgiving with my other son in California, I'm going to miss the opening, but I'm going to a tech rehearsal tonight.
Okay. Fingers crossed rehearsal tonight.
But I know it'll be great.
Yes, it's tech.
Dessa, my last question is for you. After you've met Joan and probably talked a little bit about the playwriting process, but you're an actor. In your future, do you see yourself doing more acting or maybe going to the playwright or both?
I would think both and directing.
Oh, and directing.
Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome.
Well, is there anything that we're missing, you three? Anything we'd like to add?
I think so.
I just want to say what a privilege it's been to have Joan with us. She brought her son with her also, and he's from New Orleans, this young guy. And they have dove into the Juno scene. They've met a lot of writers, musicians. They've been hanging out at the Rendezvous.
My son's a jazz musician, so he's been playing with and hooking up with all these musicians.
So I would be very surprised if we didn't see them back in town again soon. We want to have them back. They're just delightful
and
people.
We have been treated like royalty here. We've met so many artists and interesting people. And it's such an interesting town. Seems like a really great community to raise kids in, too.
Yeah, we like it. Well, Joan Cushing, thank you so much for coming in. Appreciate it. Dessa Gerger, thank you so much. Julie Copens, it's been a pleasure, and we'll see you at the show.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon today. Looks like the weather tomorrow is rain showers likely, possibly mixed with snow in the afternoon. No accumulation expected. Snow level 1,300 feet in the morning. Highs around 38. Southeast winds 10 miles per hour in the morning, becoming light and variable. Wednesday, listen to this, partly cloudy in the morning, then becoming sunny. Patchy fog, highs around 33. East wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Higher gusts near downtown Juneau and Douglas. And then Thanksgiving, sunny. Highs 27 to 33. Friday, sunny, steady temperatures in the low 20s. Saturday, mostly cloudy, highs around 23.
At 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas, we rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Thanks again for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Stay tuned for All Things Considered in about 20 seconds.